Is this real life?
Oh yeah, what is up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people from all over the planet? This is Chad from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and
rockin'
way to learn English. So download this podcast right now and listen to us while you're strumming your guitar, walking your dog, eating a bagel, or even
walking your cat.
Oh, all right. I'm joined here today in the virtual studio with the man, the guy who hasn't been on the podcast for quite some time, that you may have even forgotten who he is. It's Justin Murray.
Oh, yeah. I'm really happy to be here. I have missed the podcast tons, and nice to be back.
So when you say you have missed the podcast, are you talking about a sentimental feeling you have towards it, or are you referring to the fact that you have not been present?
Well, I meant the sentimental feeling of feeling the void of the podcast in my life. So I've wanted to be on the podcast. I just haven't been able to. I've been traveling, some technology issues, and you guys have held down the fort.
Oh, what do you mean by to hold down the fort, Justin?
When we say hold down the fort, it means that you guys have it covered. You guys are, I guess it comes from a fort, it's like a military establishment, right? So you guys are defending the home base, right? But in this case, it just means that you guys are doing the job and keeping everything stable and in great shape.
Yeah, we are maintaining the fort, and the fort being the teaching all of these awesome global citizens more and more English so they can just have an very good experience, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
In the world.
That's what it's all about, right? Of,
yeah, in this new world of connectivity, which is emerging through the internet, which is why English is probably a pretty good tool to have in your tool belt, right?
Absolutely. It's one of the best, right? Being able to communicate, I think, with people all around the world and develop relationships, access culture and information, and really go beyond your borders in every way.
Oh, yeah. Well, on that note, let's move on to today's awesome topic. It is a nipple-twisting sensation for you all today. And we're going to be talking about something that is kind of relevant because Justin's here. He's just been back to the United States, and now he's just recently come back again to Brazil. And so we're going to be talking
to
about
Brazil?
What exactly? Yeah, you're in Brazil, right?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were saying you. Okay, so you're back in Australia, right? As well.
Yeah, I'm back in Australia. Yeah, it's been a while now, so the novelty is kind of worn off. But mainly you, because you've done that jump and then jump back again. So what is the topic, Justin?
Well, today we're talking about reverse cultural shock, reverse culture shock. So you have culture shock. What's culture shock, Chad?
So culture shock is when if you go to a new country or just it could be a different place in the same country, I guess. But when you aren't accustomed to all of the typical behaviors of the people or possibly the food or the way people act or whatever, that is called culture shock, when you're not really sure how to act yourself in that surrounding. That's why I mentioned it as a bit of a nipple-twisting experience at the start.
What exactly is nipple?
Did you catch that one? You did? Okay. The reason I said that is because it's, you never do this to anyone. This is a very immature thing to do, but my brothers used to do this to me when I was a little boy, where they would grab my nipple, which is the end of my boob, that little sensitive part where a baby would breastfeed. And
Wait, you breastfeed?
Well, not anymore. When I was a baby. Well, I didn't. I breastfed with my mum's. This is strange. Anyway, nipple twisting would be when you just like twist the nipple and it's really, really painful. not even really relevant to reverse culture shock anyway, so I don't know why I use that term. I just thought it was funny. But
I used to do, and I still do this with my nephews, a wet willies. You know what a wet willy is? Oh,
I do know what that is, but please enlighten us, because it is really awesome.
A wet willy is when you lick or you put your pinky finger in your mouth to make it wet, and then you put it in somebody's ear.
What is a pinky finger?
Your pinky finger is your small finger, right? So you put it in your mouth, mm-hmm. and you make it wet, and stick it in their ear, and it's really gross.
It's disgusting, yeah. It's gross. And I think they say, I think they have a different name for it here, but I've seen wet willy on American TV shows and stuff like that. So maybe this is kind of relevant to reverse culture shock, because, or just culture shock in general, because if you go to the United States or somewhere and someone's going to be giving you some wet willies or nipple twisters, you might be shocked by that behavior and think, like, what the hell is going on in this country?
Yeah, just like an example of that, I think, that maybe a lot of people experience in Latin America or in Brazil is the body space, right? The space when you go and talk to people. People are really close talkers, right? Mm. And people touch a lot.
Yeah.
And so maybe the belly pat, like in Brazil, the belly pat is something that I thought was really interesting. Like, guys, if you know somebody, you come up, put your arm around them, that's great. You know, this is very touchy-feely. You know, compared to a lot of places in the United States, we have a lot more body space and maybe we don't touch as much. But even more, taking it to another level, they'll pat your belly sometimes. The man will pat the belly mm-hmm. of another man.
Has that happened to you? Because, you know, you were living in Belo Horizonte before and now you've moved to where exactly in Brazil?
I am in Piauí, which is the northeast. So it's definitely a very different part of Brazil. I haven't had so much contact with, like, you know, people I'm familiar with, people that I know very well, honestly, until now. So I'm not able to really evaluate that.
So you haven't had, have you had many belly pats yet?
I've had no belly pats up until now.
No belly pats?
Just my girlfriend. I mean, she gives me a belly pat sometimes. It's kind of like this.
That's not a belly pat, Justin.
So it's kind of like, because I guess when you see a guy friend after a while, like old men, it's like, oh, you have a belly on you now. I'm going to pat your belly because you've been, you know, eating a lot or drinking a lot of beer. So now you have a belly, or your stomach grew a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe, yeah, exactly. And maybe just to clarify some vocabulary there, when we say to pat would be like, you know, you can pat, we use that word for an animal. If you're going to kind of, you know, rub your hand down an animal, you say to pat a cat or to pat a dog. But when it's like someone's belly, it's like you're kind
We say pet. Isn't that what you say?
Yeah. No, I said pat, to pat your cat or dog.
We say pet. Interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, I know, because it's spelt P-E-T, actually, you're right. When you, to pet an animal, you're right. But pat would be like more like, kind of like you're like hitting it a little bit. You're like patting, like to pat someone on the shoulder or something like that shows that they have accomplished something. A pat on the
Chad,
back.
Chad, you can pat yourself on the back for that definition.
Okay. Thank you. And also you said someone is very touchy-feely. We would use that expression as an adjective to say he or she is very touchy-feely, means that they're very close and intimate with the way that they communicate. Maybe they would like actually, like, you know, rub your arm or something like that. They like to have contact with other people. Some cultures are very Absolutely. Accepting of that, and other people find it a little, I don't know, maybe a little awkward in some situations.
But when in Rome, right?
But when in Rome, do as the Romans do, yeah. Which means?
It means to follow the culture where you're at, right? So if, I think we explained this on the podcast about like waiters and tipping a few podcasts ago. But mm-hmm. yeah, so when you're in a new culture, it's like you have to open yourself up and try to follow the culture as much as possible, right?
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
So we can explore cultural shock in many ways, right? Cultural shock is there are many ways that you can be really impacted by the culture. But what's reverse cultural shock now.
Yeah, so exactly. So like we said, culture shock is when you go to a new place and you experience the culture and you find it strange or unusual, very different. But reverse culture shock would be when, for example, like in our cases, the fact that we've lived away from our home country for so long. Reverse culture shock is when you go back to your original country where you're born or whatever, and you experience culture shock there with customs that you were so used to in the past have now become foreign.
Yeah, how absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah. You go back. Yeah, you're shocked and you're kind of missing the previous culture that you were immersed in, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
going back to the United States, for example, after living a long time in Brazil, that was my experience. And you, what happened?
Yeah, okay. I've got a list of several things that I found, you know, I wouldn't say that I found them. Sometimes it's because often when we say cultural shock, it kind of has a negative connotation, like you're kind of, oh, that's different in maybe in a bad way. The fact that it's, I don't know, it just seems like it has more of a negative connotation. And I think when I came back to Australia, I had some negatives, but a lot of positives too. One funny thing though, it was a something that I noticed, and then someone else, this Brazilian girl that I know here, she actually mentioned it too. And it's like people here, they're very they're kind of rude. They burp a lot, like they openly burp in public, and even sometimes like fart. Like when you don't know the person so well, they might like definitely burp in front of you, and sometimes even like fart in front of you. I obviously always wow. Men. It's not really a female thing, but
yeah. So what exactly are burps and farts?
Yeah. Well, burps would be like if you've a typical example is if you've been eating or drinking like soda or like a soft drink or something like that, and you get like, you know, that gas build up in your chest and you burp. A fart would be like to pass wind or have flatulence.
To flatulate.
You could also say.
Yeah.
Is that a verb, to flatulate? Or
I think flatulate, I think. I'm not sure, okay. Actually. Flatulates, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To fart. Out the other end, you might say. Actually, yeah. So farting is... Go on.
I was going to say to rip one. Right. There are many terms we can use for it, but let's leave that aside.
Okay. It is a pretty interesting topic, though. How many different you know, synonyms are there for fart? Could probably have a whole podcast.
We'll have to do a podcast about that.
Yeah. But, yeah, farting definitely is very, very rude. It's not as common, but burping... it's way common. You know, I was even at you know, a restaurant, and I heard like, you know, someone like burping, you know, someone from a different table, like obviously not like really loud, and it's just more acceptable here. I can imagine, you know, in Brazil if people do that, it's very, very rude. What about over there?
Yeah, also like in the United States, maybe it's a little bit more common to like use your hands when you're eating, or maybe you might sometimes in some places people are more open to blowing their nose at the table. Mm-hmm. In Brazil, this is definitely a big no-no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. What's blowing your nose in this case?
To blow your nose is when you have buildup in your nose of boogers and snot, and or you're sick, or you have a runny nose or like a stuffed nose, and you need to to get rid of that into a napkin or to a... yeah, it's a napkin.
A handkerchief, maybe, is the actual piece of fabric that, you know, the more formal one that you actually put back into your pocket after.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I guess we could say that manners, you know, just in general, that kind of stuff, because even here, I ordered like a pizza, and I it was like a takeout pizza at home, and I grabbed a knife and fork. And everyone's like, why do you have a knife and fork with your pizza? I'm like, it's better like this. My hands don't get all sticky.
Yeah, I think the United States and Australia are similar in that respect. Like, we eat pizza with our hands. In Brazil, this is a very it's very taboo, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't say taboo, but it's just not common.
Yeah. So some other big aspects of cultural shock in the United States I noticed were, like, just, for example, the serving size. You know, some of the things, like, you go to a restaurant and you get, like, a really big serving size, or, you know, like the refills or something. I don't know if that's culture shock, but it's definitely something that kind of shocked me. What about there in Australia? So is that, say, like that too?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think refills is a common thing here. I don't think so. And serving size, no, it hasn't really surprised me. I mean, I'm kind of wondering how big the serving size must be in the US, because, man, I've seen how much food you eat in Brazil, and if you're a reverse culture shock going back to the US, I can only imagine it's even bigger than that.
I'll say, do you guys have Costco in Australia?
No, I don't think so. What is that?
Costco is like a big, what do you call this? Like a store that sells like everything in bigger quantities for a cheaper price, like wholesale.
Oh, like a wholesaler.
So it's just, it's a huge store, and just everything is just really big and tons of quantity. Like, for example, in Brazil, you know, you buy a couple of bags of popcorn or something. My parents in the United States, they buy a box with, like, you know, 30 microwave popcorn things or 40 or something.
Yeah, right.
For me, I was like, oh my gosh, so much.
But are the bags of popcorn themselves bigger than a typical bag of popcorn, or is it just how many bags you buy at the same time?
Just how many bags you buy at the same time in this case. But in other cases, like, you can get, you know, like big bins or these big containers, right, of like candy or just whatever you're buying, cookies. It's just everything is in bulk.
Okay, sure. In bulk. What does in bulk mean?
In bulk just means, you know, when you go and you there's no wrappers or containers for it. A lot of times, like, I guess you can just put everything into a bag, and then they measure by the weight, right? And to define another term that we use, we said wholesale, right? So wholesale is when everything is just, you're buying it for cheaper. You're buying it for the amount that a normal supermarket would buy it from the wholesaler, right? So it's just... Mm-hmm. It's a degree cheaper. You're cutting out the middleman or the person in the middle that would profit from that arrangement.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Another thing in relation to food that I was a little bit... I've gotten used to it now, actually. It's quite strange, actually, just thinking about this. Is here in Australia, we tend to have a smaller lunch and a bigger dinner. Smaller, like... People here eat just like a sandwich for lunch, you know, maybe have, like, you know, one or two sandwiches maximum for lunch, and then that's it, you know. But in, obviously in Brazil, it's like beans, rice, you know, piece of meat or something like that, some salad, just big, like we mentioned, a big serving of food, and then more of a smaller dinner too. But here it's kind of the opposite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, we have a really big dinner in the United States, too. Like, it's something that, actually, we just eat more in general. And I even gained some weight when I went back to the United States. One aspect of, you know, culture shock and reverse culture shock that I find pretty interesting is, like, you know, greeting people. It's like in Brazil, and I think a lot of other Latin countries, you know, it's very warm greetings, and you touch, you know, you'll... like a handshake, a hug, and with women, you'll come up and do the you know, the kiss on the cheek, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I find that it's kind of strange being back in the United States, because it's like just shaking a woman's hand a lot of times feels like it just should be warmer. It feels like it's not enough often.
Yeah.
And that's something that I haven't been able to get over.
Yeah. Man, like, now that you mention that, there's been, like, so many situations where I've done this kind of awkward, you know, like, shuffle. Like, you go to shake her, maybe shake the woman's hand, and you kind of go in and you think, oh, I don't think she's going to go for the the cheek kiss and you kind of go back, then you go in again and out, and it gets like, it gets really awkward. And yeah, I feel the same.
She's trying to
shaking him.
Make out with her, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think even, I'm surely that the women are open to that. It's just that they're, if they're not kind of, it's not common in the culture, they might just be like, whoa, what's this guy doing? But I think in general, people are warming up to that. I mean, most people now, I think, like, unless it's a business setting, I think most of my female friends here, I'd like kiss on the cheek.
Really? Even Australian women?
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Wow. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it. Yeah, yeah, and even even guys here, you know, even some of my my buddies from high school and stuff, we like would hug each other when we see each other, you know. I never ever used to do that, but now it's pretty common. Maybe it's not common. Maybe I'm starting it.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, ultimately, when you go to a new culture, right, you bring back that new stuff. You can integrate that into your life there. People might get kind of weirded out by it, right? But I mean, if you can explain it too, right?
Yeah, I guess that's probably the beauty of being a global citizen, you know, and someone that can actually interact and meet new cultures and take out these best bits, you know, because I think having a greeting people like that, being more affectionate, I think it just makes for a much friendlier and open relationship too. So I think it's definitely beneficial to have those kinds of greeting customs, you know?
Yeah, one on the other side of it, one thing I think is pretty interesting in Brazil, like people will be like, sss, sss. You know, they'll kind of make these weird calls to a waiter at a restaurant.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And in the United States, that's rude. Like really highly offensive. You'd be like, people would be really appalled by that.
Did you do that in the United States?
No, I didn't, but it's just something that I can imagine happening for Brazilians. I get when I come back to Brazil, there's that culture shock of like, what? what you're doing like a call to a waiter as if he were a dog?
Well, what would you say in the U.S. in those situations? What would be the typical way to call the attention of a waiter or a waitress or someone in service like that?
Waiter! No. It's more subtle. Oftentimes, you might just like wave at them, or you know, if the waiter is very attentive, he'll just eye contact a lot of times, right?
Okay.
Or excuse me.
Yeah, because okay, here's one situation that I was in recently. I was at this bar, and I was being polite. I was waiting my turn to get served at the bar, and there was like you know that when there's like two people in front of you, and then like. You know, as soon as one of them leaves, you're going to, like, get that space at the bar where that person was. And that person left. And as they left, this girl kind of, like, cut in front of me and, like, and grabbed that part of the bar. I was like, oh, damn. And the worst thing was that as soon as she did that, she pulled out her mobile, her cell phone, and started, like, writing a message on there. I was like, oh, no way. And so I was like, screw this girl. And I was like, because I was told and I put my hand up. I was like, hey, I kind of did that. And the guy saw me and he saw that she was on her cell phone and I got served before her.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I know.
I think like so maybe respect. I mean, just that kind of reminds me of the respect for lines. I don't know. Like in Brazil, this is something that kind of shocked me when I first came here. And I guess I was happier to be in more of an organized culture when I went back to the United States, where people kind of respect lines more, you know.
Yeah, there is a lot of, you know, really bad. I just remember in very bad situations waiting for a bus, and when the bus is very full and everybody just it's a free for all, like, you know, whoever gets on the bus gets on, whoever doesn't gets left behind, kind of thing.
What do you mean by free for all?
A free-for-all, that's kind of even hard. It's probably even very hard to pronounce as well. So it's free-for-all. It's kind of like as if we use it as a way of describing it. It's a free-for-all situation, means that there are no rules. There's no you can do whatever you want, and no one's it's not going to be a problem. Everyone can act without worrying about rules or laws.
Yeah, like lions, man. Like in Brazil, I just remember times when like if you give any space and somebody cuts in front of you, it's not their fault. It's your fault because you actually left the space. And so
yeah,
and that's definitely a very different ethic from the United States, where it's just like, yeah, kind of respect the line, respect the order, and
I've heard that
knock on Brazilian culture.
Yeah, maybe every culture is a reflection of you know, certain ways that they how that country, you know, grew. But one thing that I always I've never actually experienced this, but I've always seen like internet memes, or I've heard that the Canadians are like overly polite, you know, they're overly generous in those situations where it's like, you go first. No, no, you go first. No, I insist, you go. No, please, go in front of me. You know, it's like, just somebody go, you know.
What about the Aussies? How are they?
Aussies. They're probably kind of right in the middle, you know. People don't, you know, if you They're not gonna be rude and you know straight out just cut you off and be like, you know, a bit of an asshole like that. But they're not gonna, if there's space, they're just gonna, you know, they're not gonna miss an opportunity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, yeah. But to tell the truth, you know, in regards to reverse culture shock, I still I guess I'm still getting used to Perth because it's changed a lot. You know, I haven't lived here for 10 years, and actually a lot of things have changed to my surprise. You know, like even little things like that have changed. You know, like I said, I there's probably little subtle things that I'm not remembering right now, but it is a very, very different place than I remember.
Yeah, it's interesting. It probably gives you a great chance to really step outside of your culture, reflect in a different way about that, and because a lot of times we don't even realize it, we take for granted these things, right? And then it's you leave your country and come back, you get adapted to another culture, and you come back, and it's all of a sudden you notice and you have much more awareness for these things.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, did you have a big change? Did you sense a big change going back to the United States, or do you feel like you've kind of kept up with all the changes just because American culture is just so widespread like that?
What do you mean by widespread?
Widespread means that it's known, you know, all around. American culture is widespread means that you know, people from, you know, through the media, people from South America, Europe, and stuff like that are quite familiar with it. It's spread all over. It's widespread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my experience with that was, you know, in some sense, some of the things are definitely very widespread, but there's a lot of, like, new technology that I was very interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like it's more prevalent there because it's a little bit more advanced. The technology and maybe the infrastructure. But I didn't really spend so much time outside of my family's home. I hung out at my parents' house. I stayed there. And we kind of live out in the country in a rural area. So I don't feel like I was completely socialized to have the full impact of the reverse culture shock. But I did think about a lot of stuff.
Okay.
And another thing that I think is really important is the kind of the desire to reconnect with that culture, with the culture you're coming from. And so I think reverse cultural shock, part of it is actually, it's finding opportunities where you can kind of revisit that global perspective that you've developed, that international perspective. So, for example, you know, if you lived in Ireland or something, then maybe you might want to really connect with Irish people or Irish culture, right? And so you can use technology for that. Maybe, you know, there's cultural events happening from Irish, like St. Patrick's Day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what else is Irish? I mean, when I think of Irish, I think now of, like, Conor McGregor.
Okay. Who's Conor McGregor?
Conor McGregor is the UFC world champion. I think it's like bantamweight. I'm not sure what his... I think he has like two weight titles right now.
What about you? Aren't there a lot of Brazilians there in Perth? Have you reconnected with Brazilian culture since you've been back to sort of ease that reverse culture shock?
Not really. I mean, I have a couple of friends, Brazilian. My brother's girlfriend is Brazilian, and her family. But it's actually funny. There's a member of this group called I think it's like Brasileiros in Perth or something like that. And you see people like posting there all the time, like, oh hey, I've brought over some. They bring over like, you know, Toddy, like the chocolate drinks, or you know, all these, you know, cachaça, all these like stuff from Brazil, where there's like food and just things that, to help them, you know, I guess because they miss it from Brazil, you know, stuff that you can't buy here, which is a big thing, you know, when you're so accustomed to certain foods and stuff like that, and you go to another country and they don't have them, it can drive you crazy, or like, you know, you get really excited to try it again.
Yeah, I remember you back in Brazil, always looking out for the Vegemite, right? You were constantly looking for a shipment of that. When you got it, you were super stoked.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, you're right. It was definitely like really awesome to have Vegemite there, and it was like a novelty. Like, oh yeah, Vegemite. But now that I'm back living in Australia, I don't eat Vegemite very often. I have an abundant supply of Vegemite, and I'm like, yeah. It doesn't taste as good anymore, you know? Which is funny. I guess it happens for everyone, you know, even Brazilians here. They're like, oh, I really need my pão de queijo or whatever they're kind of importing here. But when they go back to Brazil, they probably don't eat it as much, like açaí or something like that, you know?
What's pão de queijo?
Pão de queijo is the cheese bread, the Brazilian... It's like a little Brazilian... savory snack, cheese bread.
Yeah. So I mean, part of that is just maintaining your identity, right? You're just kind of maintaining your identity, who you are. You're maintaining that nostalgia of where you come from, that relationship.
Yeah, I don't know if it's identity, but more like the latter there. You said like the nostalgia. It's like, because maybe when you eat, you're like, oh yeah, this is so good. This is and because it's only from there, it hits this kind of like. This hits home a little bit there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I can do that so much from the United States, because I'm going to be like, oh, McDonald's, home sweet home. I will say that there's a lot of confusion about that. People think like Americans, we don't have culture and stuff, that McDonald's is a culture. But we do have culture. We do have like authentic food, and it's not McDonald's. McDonald's is just like the worst, cheapest part that was exported. And that often is the case, that the worst part of your culture gets exported for some people.
Yeah, I'd say like maybe the US is in some ways kind of similar to Australia in that respect of the culture, because like so many different people from different nationalities went to the US to settle, you know, and it's just been such a huge mixture of all these different cultures, much like here in Australia. It was kind of like, you know, it's British culture, you know, and now it's become much more you know, different, you know, a lot of Southeast Asian culture is very popular here, you know. Now we have, like you mentioned, lots of Brazilians. So I think in countries like these ones that were kind of colonized not so long ago have less like cultural real roots like that, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. The history brings like a pretty strong cultural footprint on there, right?
Yeah.
And more recent countries don't have that as much. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. Well, I mean, like, you know, Australia, it's never been like such a melting pot of culture, for example, like how Brazil has been. You know, Brazil kind of was colonized by Portuguese. You have like, what, you got like lots of different influences from Europe, you know, other European countries, even some, you know, some Japanese countries, like in certain parts of Brazil, you have lots like a strong Asian culture, maybe. I don't know, but I'm just saying that Brazil's done a really good job of like mixing all those cultures together and creating their own kind of thing. As opposed to Australia, they didn't really mix a lot. It just kind of, it has, a few things here and there, but nothing's really like mixed together and made its own Australian thing like Brazil has.
What about the Aboriginal culture? Is that part of Australian culture in a strong sense?
Well, not in a strong sense, no. It's like one of those sad stories of, colonized by the British people, and pretty much they weren't interested in that culture, and kind of, they wiped it out, really, pretty much. Something like 90% of
What
indigenous
does
people
wipe out mean?
were wipe out. In this case, means to kind of eliminate, get rid of. It was kind of
Was it assimilated or wiped out?
It was wiped out, pretty much. It was like genocide.
A lot of like diseases and sicknesses, right? That's pretty similar, I think, to the United States with our native history, which is really sad too.
Yeah, and also, it's really sad, and also just as sad that they're not like the culture was never really discovered. There's probably like a lot of, a lot of really awesome things that died with that culture, and that probably happens has happened all over the world, and just kind of gets lost, I guess. But that's kind of a sad note to finish this podcast on. Should we should we liven it up a little bit with maybe a positive thing about you going back to Brazil? Maybe is there anything that you've come back to Brazil and like, oh yeah, that's right, here we have this.
Well, I'd say on the flip side of that, it's like kind of, I mean, this is the whole thing, like the world is becoming more and more homogenous. It's like you're losing the smaller cultures to become like one. There are less and less cultures that exist, and in some cases, like the Native Americans and the Aborigines, it's really sad, right? But on the other hand, it's becoming more unification in the world. Just becoming more like just being able to communicate and speak the same language, English, for example, right? Then
Yeah.
the world becomes a better place because we can talk to each other and think in the same way. Unfortunately, there has been collateral damage for that, losing all these cultures. But anyways, we're moving forward, right? Global citizenship and
Yeah.
globalized world. Becoming more and more connected. So,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
it's
There's
great to
always
be back in
a
Brazil. It's great. I feel the reverse cultural shock. I feel the culture shock. And I'm just excited to move forward with some great podcasts and some great content with Real Life English. And pretty soon we're going to have a really awesome social English learning platform back again and be able to connect people from all around the world.
Yeah, it's been down and out for quite a while, but it's going to be back up and really ready to kick some ass now. Now more than ever, I think we need this platform. And obviously, its main purpose is to obviously help you all speak English and teach you guys English. But I think it's the underlining purpose is also kind of what we're talking about, just connecting you guys, giving everyone an opportunity to meet and exchange cultures with new people all over the world. And I guess it's kind of like celebrating your own culture. Obviously what we just mentioned there with people kind of losing their cultures to make this one global culture, but at the same time it's also, coming together and celebrating your own culture whilst creating a more unified culture at the same time, like we mentioned. It's kind of grim because we also were talking about Brexit last week, and now we mention. But yeah, now more than ever, we need real life global, right?
Yeah, really excited to bring that to the world. But it's been a great podcast, great connecting with you, Chad, great sharing with all of you guys, our community, and I'm looking forward to being on this podcast more.
Yeah. Some of these subjects we're talking about as well. Obviously, there's a there's a, I just wanted to quickly mention a book which Justin and I have both just recently read, and I thought it could probably interesting. They probably have it in many different languages if you didn't want to read it in English, because it's quite a difficult book to get through. It's called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. I think that's a pretty cool book to just give you some insight into some of these, at least a lot of the stuff that I was thinking about when talking about this with you today, Justin. I was remembering certain aspects of that book, which are, it's an amazing book. I think it's a really, I think everybody should read that to get a certain perspective on the history of kind of humans and Homo sapiens.
Yeah, humankind, right?
Humankind, yeah, exactly.
What do you mean by humankind? So it's kind of the history of the past, yeah, the past like 70,000 years pretty much. Like 70,000 years ago, there were, you know, various species of human-like creatures, like the you know, Neanderthals and Australopithecus and stuff. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on Australopithecus. I don't know about that. But they were inhabiting the Earth with us. And then Homo we erectus? Emerged as kind of the... Yeah. I don't know. This is something I learned in world history class a long time ago. But we emerged as the winners in this, you know, competition for, you know, the world control, pretty much. And
yeah,
that's another podcast.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought we'd just finish it by just referencing the book. And if you guys want to check it out, it's called Sapiens. Awesome read. Definitely recommend it. Okay, guys. So thank you for joining us here today. And like always, you'll hear from us next week on Real Life Radio. 1, 2, 3. Oh yeah.
You can got to stand up, baby, stand up. Standing on your two knees, baby, tell me what do you need? Oh, oh, oh. Stand up on your two feet, baby, that's how it's got to be. Stand up, baby, stand up. You got to stand up, baby. You got to raise your head to the sky, see the love in your eyes. You got to make a move, you got to make it through. You got to be real with yourself, gotta make a move. Stand up,
stand up,
baby,
baby,
stand up. You got to get together.